Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of Published. Today, we'll be talking about event planning with Ashland Viscosi, owner of Creatives Meet Business.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher, to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome back to another episode of Published. Today we have a fun guest for you. We're often asked by authors about planning events, whether that's bookstore signings, a large-scale conference, or something in between. For some authors, an event can be a great way to promote their book and hopefully sell some copies. But a lot more work goes into event planning than many people think. We've done an event here at Greenleaf for a couple of years and ultimately shelved it because it turned out to be such an undertaking that it would require a full-time person. So today we'll talk about how authors can evaluate whether an event is the right way to promote their book and build their platform, and how they can provide value to the people that attend if they do produce an event. Joining me is Ashland Viscosi. Ashland founded Creatives Meet Business, an event and podcast series here in Austin for creatives of all disciplines to define themselves as artists and creatives and small business owners and entrepreneurs. She also hosts, produces, and edits the Creatives Meet Business podcast. Ashland also created a three-day series of workshops called CMBXP, which is Creatives Meet Business Experience, that helps artists and creatives in real time with artistry, business, marketing, and storytelling. And on top of all of that, she is the sponsor relations coordinator with the ATX Television Festival and the programming director for Social Media Week Austin. So long story short, Ashland has a lot of experience planning and executing events of all sizes and some really helpful advice for our listeners. So let's get into the interview. Ashland, welcome to Published.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am too. And I will apologize to everybody listening for my voice because I'm getting over a little bit of something and it's incredibly nasal. This will be a joy for people to listen to, I'm sure. But I'll let you do most of the talking. How's that?
Sounds good.
So Ashland is an event planner, and a lot of times when I talk to authors about how are they going to monetize their idea, how are they going to bring their message to the world, events come up as an opportunity, not only on a small scale to obviously sell books back of room or you know, do like a speaking engagement, but also larger scale, think Tony Robbins type big events that are really a part of the brand franchise. So that's obviously a way that we would create both the influence and income of the ideas and influence and income trifecta that we talk about with our authors. So that said, it's a big commitment of time and money. I know here at Greenleaf, we did a live event for 2 years and it was, I would say it was successful, but when we kind of weighed the distraction and the effort and the money that went into it, we ultimately decided it was so much of a commitment. It really almost required a full-time person to manage. So what guidance would you give somebody who is considering events and whether that somehow should fit into their strategy for bringing an idea into the world?
Yeah, and that's great that you do mention the time commitment and the money, because events take way more than you would ever think. Some people have this notion that's like, oh, it's an event, I'll just put that together. It's like, do you know that it takes about 9 months to do? It's amazing how many small details and things actually go into it, anywhere from the promotions around it to the concepting to the branding. There's just huge amounts of work that actually do go into events and event production. So the first piece of advice or really thing I would think about or guide people to think about is, what is something that's non-monetary? Not how many books I'm going to sell, not that at all. What is something else you can measure success by? What is that thing going to be? Is it something like, I want to introduce more people to this concept, or I want more people to know about this taco truck, let's say your book is about tacos or something like that. So define success by a measurement that's not about sales. That way you can also feel really validated and excited if you hit that measurement and the other one. You're obviously going to be having a secondary goal, which is going to be to sell books, or I want more people to know about my philosophy. I want more bing, bang, bong, insert whatever that is for you, but have something else that's not that thing that you can actually chronicle your own success and measure it by.
That's good advice.
Thank you. Yeah, events aren't really for everyone. Like, not every single thing needs to have an event around it. So really know what you're getting into before you do it. Know how much legwork, how much work is involved, and then decide, hey, is this other measurement that I have for success, is that important enough for me to actually go through all the steps of event creation?
In your experience, is there a certain type of content or subject area that lends itself to successful events? When you say they're not for everyone, is there sort of a typical profile where you look at somebody and their material and you say, yeah, that would make an awesome event?
Yeah, so there's things that are going to be really traditional in nature, which might just be a book reading at a bookstore, and you have a cheese plate there and maybe you have some wine. So those are very simple, low impact, but you still largely at that type of event, you're going to get a lot of people who are in literary circles. Mm-hmm. Who are you trying to reach, and is your event going to be reaching them? I think things that have an experiential arm are going to be far more successful. So let's go back to that taco book, for example, right? So if you did something where it's going to be a taco tour, and that's the event that you're actually producing, and we're going to go hit 5 different taco places, we're going to have one of the chefs come and walk through his recipe, and we're going to do a live demonstration, we're going to do something like that where it's experiential. Then maybe with it, you also package a copy of the book as part of the ticket, whatever it is that you want to do to also get the book into people's hands. But what is an experiential component you can have? And maybe if it's a book on, let's say it's a business philosophy, maybe you do a workshop around it, and then the book is also included. So what can you do that's really promoting the message of it, but it's entirely experiential? Those are going to be more successful because you can get more people on board to promote it and more people interested in coming because they'll connect to your message through the experience that you bond them to.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we actually, in our experience, even bookstores now will often turn down authors who are trying to just do a signing because there's absolutely nothing experiential about it. And it's quite sad actually to see an author sitting at a table all by themselves.
Exactly.
Just hoping the right, you know, prospective reader happens to stumble by, which is highly unlikely. So
exactly.
I think that also brings you the right type of audience versus just depending on luck. So that's really good advice. And, and also I think underscores the importance of leaning on an event planner like you to bring in that creativity and some of the experience you have with different types of events. Because I hadn't thought about some of the things that you just said as even being an option. I think we kind of go to event equals conference or workshop, but there are lots of other opportunities, as you've just pointed out.
Right. There are so many, and it's... I'm thinking of the example you're talking about where there is the author and they're there for the book signing and you put so much work into your book. I mean, it's your baby and you can't really separate what something might look like that's right for you. Because you're like, well, this is what people do. This is what a successful author does is they have a book signing. Well, but that's a model that's not, I'm not saying it's outdated because there certainly is still a place for it. But if you're a new and up and coming author, that might not be the right avenue. How do you connect people to this thing that's your baby? You're so excited about it. And ultimately you want people to read it, to understand your philosophy, whatever the underlying reason is that you created and wrote this book. Well, how do you get this audience to care and to be impassioned by it? And they're not just going to want to come to a book signing. They want to actually have real examples that are tangible of how can I engage with this content and figure out like, oh, I need this. I didn't know I needed it, but like now I know I need it.
Right. So word of mouth marketing is a huge boost for any product launch. And they say the number one rule of word of mouth marketing is give them something to talk about.
Right.
An event would certainly be something to talk about, but how do you go about promoting that event to an audience so that they know you have something to talk about?
Right. So with event promotion, I look at it from so many different angles. So first, you really need these innermost ambassadors, people that, let's think of the right way to frame it. Are you familiar with The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So in it, he talks about a framework of three people where there's the, what is his framework? It's the connector, the salesperson, and it's the maven. That's what he calls it, right? So there's actually a local guy here named Bijoy Goswami who has a framework that I much prefer. It's called the human fabric, and it's similar, but Malcolm Gladwell's is almost like this is Spinal Tap where you've turned it up to 11 and you see these extreme examples of people that you can't really see. Well, how do I fit into one of these if like I don't see myself at this high-performing volume? So in Bijoy Goswami's book, he's talking about, well, there's the maven, there's a relator, and there's an evangelist. So what's driving you to do anything? Is it the pursuit of connection, pursuit of relationship, or the pursuit of, connection, relationship, wisdom, and then action, right? So there is that inner circle, that relator, that they're the connection one. They walk between so many different worlds and they have huge amounts of relationships. So getting people like that to start disseminating your message, because they do walk so many different worlds, it's going to span your message much farther than if you're just promoting to this one circle. Obviously, things like Facebook ads especially, it's harder and harder to get things to organically promote through Facebook. So even just doing something where you create an event and you boost it, but finding people in nonprofits, nonprofits or similar organizations, having them also help you with the promotion is going to help enormously. But you can't just say like, hey, help me promote this thing. Make it valuable for them. Like, also help them promote their things down the line. Come up with copy and custom graphics for everybody. They're going to be much more excited about sharing and promoting. So let's do like a mock. Let's come up with a fake event. Let's go back to that taco truck, for example, right? So in that, you've also got 5 different restaurants that people are going to be visiting on the stop. Well, then you could maybe have each chef create a small video that you can also help amplify and promote. You can easily talk to media and say like, hey, we're doing this cool thing. You could find like Eater Austin or different local publications and magazines that cater to food-based events. So it's finding things that are thematic and then who wants to talk about that. I mean, different media, traditional media outlets, they need content, but then there's also social media. There's tons of ways to promote it. But I would still go back to that circle, that relator circle that I talked about earlier. They're likely going to be your friends, so they already have a mission and a passion for what you're doing, and they are going to know people who should be coming to this because they know people who love tacos, or they know people who love to cook, or they know whoever it might be, and they can start inviting and sharing the word much more quickly than you can do it on your own. Mm-hmm. So it's having those different ambassador circles is what I call people like that, and then figuring out what are the right outlets who would actually care to cover it, and then dedicating a lot of time to social. But know, is your audience going to be more on Instagram? Are they going to be on Facebook? Are they Twitter? Are they LinkedIn? Where does my audience actually spend their time? Because you don't really want to have an active profile if nobody's coming to your Facebook and it's your Aunt Sally. And you're like, well, I mean, that's great that she's liking my content. That's phenomenal. But I just spent 3 hours right. coming up with stuff for the week and nobody's liking it.
Aunt Sally won't convert.
But Aunt Sally's going to come anyway because she loves me and she like wants my taco book to sell. But no, she's not really your audience. Your audience are those other people outside of your existing circles. So how do you reach them? Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of I take my existing network and help leverage and find new people through people I already know.
And speaking of leverage, mm-hmm. I would think that a sponsor, if we're talking taco trucks again, mm-hmm. let's say Old El Paso comes in and sponsors. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's opportunities to leverage mm-hmm. a huge partner like that and bringing in their reach. And of course, sponsorships bring a lot of funding that mm-hmm. can make other things possible. So any advice on sponsorships and when that's appropriate and what shape they may take? Because it could be an exchange for mm-hmm. product and visibility or just the connection to the brand. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about sponsorships.
Yeah. So I've worked with sponsors at lots of different levels. And the biggest thing I would wrap my mind around first and really caution people to with sponsorship is, first of all, do you want the affiliation with them? Just because they have money, just because they have an audience, just because they have whatever, you have created this thing, this book, this concept, this event, this whatever, and it's beautiful and it's yours and it's precious. Do you want that affiliation? Because it might not be the right fit, and now you've branded them to what you're doing. And are you actually comfortable taking that on? So assuming the answer is yes, you love Old El Paso, you constantly make their taco mix at home, you're like, oh my God, I couldn't be a bigger fan of this. This is amazing and great. Awesome. You've hit that first checkbox, which is they're actually a fit for me and I want that affiliation. Not just like I've taken the money, but I don't really care about the product at all and I don't believe in it. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not authentic and creating something unique to you, your audience is going to also have that affiliation with this thing that you don't actually want them to really have a connection with. You want their money, but you should also want like, but I also believe in what you stand for and I'm honored to have you as a sponsor with me, right? And then there's also this idea that sponsorships are easy. They're not. Or like, oh, it's fine. I'm going to put on a conference. I can just get sponsorships. No. It takes so much time, so much energy, especially with corporate giving. It takes a lot longer than you would think. With the exception of, let's say you're in an unlicensed venue and you need alcohol. That's one of the quicker things to do is just to get a product donation. But if you're actually trying to get cash, you need to be on people's radar. Let's see, it's already November at this point. You would have probably needed to be on their radar in October for anything in 2018 so they can budget out. And so most people, if you're doing an event in, say, May, you're probably thinking in February, like, oh, okay, I should start thinking about cash sponsorship. No, no, no. You need to be thinking about that so long ago because of how long corporate giving is really the timeline mm-hmm. is much longer than you would probably be thinking about. The other piece around that, too, is it's all about relationship. Like, do you already have a relationship with the company? How can you get your foot in the door, assuming that that is the avenue you want to go forward with, right? So it's finding the right contact there, finding the right company you want to work with. And then you also have to make sure you have something of value to them. Is it A, they want your audience? Is your audience big enough? Do you have a big enough social media presence or a big enough following? Find out why they actually want to invest in you, because it is a partnership. It's not just a one-way giving street where they're like, here's $5,000, enjoy, have a great time. You want to keep working with them. Odds are if you're writing a book on tacos, you're probably going to write another cookbook on something else or another cultural history, food tour, whatever it might be. So you don't want to burn a relationship. You want to make sure that you're giving whatever it is that they want and that you're able to give that. Don't be dishonest. Don't be disingenuous. Don't say something people want to hear. You have to really be able to prove that you can do those different things and make it a good partnership. And then are there cool and unique ways that you could insert a sponsor in something like that? Maybe using, again, the taco truck example and the food tour, and it's Old El Paso who's a sponsor. Well, maybe it's the different chefs who you'll be visiting on the tour. Maybe each one has been challenged with come up with a unique concept using Old El Paso, and it's a video and you're promoting the video to gain your audience. So what are unique ways that you can really be inserting a brand so they actually feel like they're part of it? Again, you don't just want their money. You want them to be part. You want a partner out of that sponsor.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And in terms of going back to trying to sell something or create the income from the event, a lot of our authors, of course, will be trying to figure out a way to integrate book sales into any event that they're doing. So at the same time, they don't want to come off as salesy, or they also probably don't want to stand at the back of the room with a till doing individual transactions. Right. So any tips for how to do that in an effective way that still maintains the brand integrity?
Mm-hmm. So in something like that, I would imagine you'd be more comfortable with selling the book in advance, like it's part of the ticket purchase. So maybe, again, on this whole taco tour thing, right? Maybe it's $35 and it includes a copy of the book. Mm-hmm. And then that way, and each person gets to try a taco along the experience, they get whatever, and you've already done the heavy lifting and you've already sold the book and you've made the money that you need to make. There could be really cool opportunities too, where maybe there's something on site you can sell that's an experience, or you buy a raffle ticket to win a curated tour with the author, and we're gonna go to these different restaurants together. But there could be really cool and unique ways to do things on site that feel, again, experiential. Because selling your book, as you mentioned, just like hanging in the back with a till and you're signing, that is uncomfortable. And you're waiting for people to come up to you, and you're really excited to have them there, but then you, the author, you're not out meeting with your audience. You're not connecting. You're having to spend your time like, well, now I'm in sales mode. How can you do that upfront? How can you make sure that the book is sold? Because that is the ultimate goal, right? You do want people to connect with your concept, your philosophy, your narrative fiction, like whatever it is that you've written about. You want that in people's hands, and then you want them talking about it. But how can you go ahead and make sure, like, check, they have a copy of the book, it was included with your ticket, I don't have to worry about it, and now I can actually go and meet with you at the event, versus having to be a wallflower in something that you've spent all this time creating.
Right, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And yes, it's very awkward also to be standing in that line and waiting, and you may lose people. So definitely, yeah. I agree, roll it in with the fee.
Yeah.
And in some cases, because a book can be, not all cases, but it can be kind of a cumbersome object.
Right.
I've even known authors to send the book in advance.
Oh, cool.
And that gives people the chance to kind of get into the content a little bit. And then there's some more common ground once they actually begin talking about those ideas.
That's fun.
Yeah.
And then there is, though, if people do want that experience, and if, let's say that the author is rather introverted and they really don't want to be out hobnobbing in a crowd, or they don't want to speak to the whole room, and that gives people complete shivers and shakes. They're just like, I can't imagine myself doing it. And that is the comfort zone. Like, they do want to be behind a table. Great. Can, like, whenever they check in at the beginning of the event, give them the book. And then if they want the option, well, there's a second book signing if you'd like to go and have it signed. It's doing things based on your comfort level too. Mm-hmm. But if you do want to make sure that the book is sold, don't have that be something that happens at the event, because it's too passive. It's way too easy to not buy it. So how can you go ahead and roll that in so you've guaranteed the sale? And then if people want that extra time with you, great, it's an option. They can come and they can step in line, and you can take a photo and talk about your favorite chapter. I mean, that could be also something really cute too, is like, let's talk about your favorite thing from the book and just have a discussion if you use the example of they've already received it in advance.
Yeah, good advice. Mm-hmm. So obviously an event or a conference, a great way to, again, connect with individuals and start to build that audience, the platform that we talk about in the publishing community. So once the event is over, obviously we don't want those people to just disappear into the background. How do we best capture information, first of all, in a way that really makes them a part of our community, mm-hmm. and then stay connected with them and get feedback about the event and really roll them into the world that we're trying to create mm-hmm. as someone sharing big ideas?
Right. So that's a great question. I am a big advocate of making sure you have people's email addresses, because things like social platforms, say Instagram, Facebook, what have you, it's amazing that you've curated a really great following, but at any moment's notice, that account could be deleted by the platform for whatever reason. Let's say everything going on with Russia as it is right now, you really never know how safe those things are, because you are contributing to a platform that you do not own. So how do you make sure you actually own that information? Therefore, an email newsletter or having their email address is a far more secure way of actually staying in touch, because anything could be taken away from you again, mm-hmm. like I mentioned. So when you say feedback, that's a good question. Do you actually want feedback about the event? I do. Like, I am a big believer. I produce different events and conferences and things, and I love making things better, because I am creating something. It's educational in nature, and I want my audience to actually tell me, like, hey, I learned this. I didn't learn this. Hey, I liked this event. I didn't like this. This is what I'd love to see more of, whatever it might be. I tend to ask probably too many questions in my survey, and I have a surprisingly high response rate, but then I have 10 pages of takeaway notes from my past conference. So I'm like, I really, really care. I genuinely want to make this thing better for you. So if you are surveying, it might be something like, hey, did you like this kind of event that we're doing? Would you come to more like these? If we started doing something every 6 months and putting on taco tours, would you want to come to something like it? So I think in that case, you're trying to get feedback that's more, will you stay a part of this community? What kinds of things are you interested in? Do you want me to start a book group and a book club? And maybe once a month, it's things that I, as an author, I'm really interested in, and maybe that's interesting to you as well. So I think if you're going to be getting a survey or doing feedback in that sense, it's more, how can I keep you as an invested member in my community? I'm so excited you came out. I hope to keep seeing you. What would allow me to keep seeing you? But again, it would be largely collecting that information through a newsletter. And just when I say newsletter, I mean getting their email address. Mm-hmm. And then having a regular correspondence. But at the same time, if you don't have something to say, why say it? And if it's just like, well, I need to send out something once a month just to like, so they don't forget me. Well, but then like people are probably gonna unsubscribe if they found it to be completely non-informational. There was this, oh God, it's been years at this point, and I'd contributed to a crowdfunding campaign for a filmmaker. And she was also creating a book around the film as well. And she did the most beautiful job of sending updates, because they were very emotional, and it was her attachment to the subject. She'd been an assistant to him for, oh God, probably like 20 or 30 years. And he was a country music legend. And so he had already a rich legacy around him. But she had just such a beautiful connection and what she was talking about. Like, hey, I went through old photos and getting things ready for the book. And these are a few of my favorites that I found. So she had a really great way of keeping you along the process. So you were there for the journey. So maybe it is something too, like an author's completed a work, they're working on their second, and they're sharing tidbits about that, what that looks like. Or, hey, I'm wanting some user feedback. I've got some early things done. Do you want to come and be part of this new taco experience for this book? Whatever it might be. So how do you actually get people invested? And something too, like I drew on earlier when I talked about the relator framework, right? So those are likely people that are already your friends or you have a strong connection to, and they just happen to have extensive networks. How do you keep them engaged to also maybe be group facilitators on something? And maybe they're continuing to also send out emails and updates, so it's not always coming from you. So it's how do you keep an entire community invested and not just always be you who's disseminating that message? How do you get other people still talking about it?
Right. You got to build a team.
You got to build a team. And that's something that's probably overlooked the most. Because mm-hmm. while you do create something and it is your brainchild and it's your baby and it's what you've put on paper, which is truly amazing, it's not just for you. You've created it for people to engage with. So how do you make sure that they're engaging, and how do you build the right team environment that speaks to you, that's true to you, that helps represent your voice, but extends your reach, because you're one person and can only do so much.
Mm-hmm. So what other sort of parting advice would you give to authors who are considering whether or not they want to go down this event road?
Yeah. So again, really thinking about the time it takes, let's see, for something, even a fairly small event, you're probably looking at, as you mentioned, actually, let's go back to your example of the event that you were doing for a couple of years, and then you're like, wow, this is a ton of work. We probably need to have a full-time staff person on this event. Do you actually want to go down that road, and do you actually want to be spending the amount of time it will take? Because that does remove you from your other creative processes. However, it's a great way to get people to know what your product is and to know what your book is and to know what your story is. But do you actually want to go down that road? And really asking yourself a few questions, which is like, do I have the time to commit? Is my type of content, like, is there something experiential I can do? Do I want to follow something that's more traditional and maybe who comes out is people in literary circles, but who am I trying to reach? And is an event the right way to reach them?
Yeah, good. Well, Ashlyn, you've given us some awesome advice. I'm guessing our listeners have pages of notes. And if they have any follow-up questions, would you care to share your contact info, a way they can reach you?
Sure. Yeah, I'm very easy to find, especially my name is Ashlyn Viscosi. There's really nobody else with that name. So if you find that, you'll find me. So my website is cmbatx.com. And my email is ashland, like the city in Oregon, ashland, at cmbatx.com. And if you do have any questions, I'm more than happy to help and be a resource. I really love seeing good events and then people who can connect with it and experience it and have people talking about it and really see a more rich environment around the literary community. I think the work that's being produced is amazing, and I'd love to see more people engaging and help you find your right audience.
Awesome. And I wish people could have seen the eye roll that came along with Ashland. Because she is often called Ashley, and that is wrong.
Yeah, more often than not.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you to Ashlyn Viscosi for stopping by today. We so appreciate it. And for notes from today's show and to learn more about Ashlyn and Creatives Meet Business, go to greenleafbookgroup.com/episode16.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.